Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. I am your host, Angela Alberti. Very excited to have the opportunity to interview John Lewin with Stivers. He's a veteran within the staffing industry. So this episode is aimed at all of those within this unique human capital space that helps put the world of work to work every single day. Without any further ado, John, please give a brief introduction of yourself.
Oh, thank you, Angela. Happy to be here. I've been in workforce solutions, staffing, recruiting for approximately 24 years. Currently, the president of Stivers. We're an operating company within the Talent Launch Network. Most of our recruiting is in the areas of office, professional. We do some supply chain, and then we have a separate division that focuses on retail merchandising as well. So we've been around a long time, 75 years, which there aren't too many organizations in our industry that can say that, but right. Yeah, that's a little bit about us.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you for that overview. Great to hear that you guys are segmented out into three different categories. So, you know, as president of Stivers, what is your day consist of? What are your areas of responsibility? I know one day is never the same, especially in this industry, but in a general overview, what are you responsible for?
Yeah, sometimes I refer to it as organized chaos at best, but
yes.
you know, for Stivers, you know, we really are a growth company. So for us, it's really about not so much growing our physical footprint, but more about putting people to work and growing the organization that way. So for us, it's about impacting lives. A lot of my day, you know, is really spent working with our internal team and making sure that, you know, we're focused on both our client. So we've always said we have two sets of customers, really, our candidates that we place out on positions, and then our customers, our employers that we place those candidates with. And so really the majority of my day is really spent focusing on that, whether it's directly, you know, communicating with candidates or clients or working with the teams across the country that that focus on servicing both customer bases, as I would say.
Yeah, there's definitely lots of different layers of customer service to handle, especially within this space. But, you know, one of the things that attracted me, I guess, when I was looking up the opportunity to podcast interview you was your background. And you've been at some mega staffing global workforce solutions providers. I'd love to get your take on what that experience has been like going to, you know, in fact, some of the companies that you've been at have probably within that top 10 category in terms of the staffing spend out there. But what has that experience been like going from these mega companies into, well, still a relatively large company like Stivers? I'm sure there's been some differences and nuances that you've picked up in that process.
Yeah, I would say in the large company space, and I'm talking, you know, $5 billion and up, probably the major difference there, you do have a lot of resources at your fingertips. And we still have resources here today at Stivers, but maybe not to the extent that you do when you're at one of the large global firms. I think the other thing that's different in one of those experiences with one of the large international firms, it was really like getting an MBA on the job. I really had an opportunity to function in several different roles, which stretched across, you know, multiple divisions, multiple operating units. We did have a multi-brand strategy there as well. So I was able to work with folks in other divisions and other operating companies. But here at Stivers, I think the big difference is the fact that it got to a point after a while where I was several layers removed from what was going on at the ground level. I wasn't as involved with, you know, customers on a day-to-day basis, you know, really interacting with our teams that are on the front line. Sometimes I was three or four layers removed from that. And I think being in this role for the last couple of years, I've really had to roll my sleeves up a bit more. And I think I've probably garnered a better understanding of where things are at on the ground level today directly versus being several layers removed from it. So I think that's been sort of the biggest thing. I would also describe it maybe as a bit more entrepreneurial in the sense that we can make decisions quicker and faster on the ground versus having to go through processes either for approvals or to get buy-in from many different groups to get something done. So we have the benefit of, you know, if there's an opportunity in front of us and we feel that the financials are right, the opportunity is right, everything fits, we can make a strategic or a tactical decision to say, okay, we're going to go after that chunk of business, or we're going to modify our delivery this way to meet that customer need or whatever it might be. And then I'd say the last thing, just the ability to sort of impact change, you know, quicker and faster when you're in a smaller organization. I mean, your superpower, if you will, is really how flexible or nimble you are when you're smaller, because you have to punch outside your weight class a little bit from time to time. And that's really what I'd say are really the differences between the two.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a fantastic take. I came from a global organization as well. And I think one of the benefits that I've learned, at least being part of the organization that I am in now, is, you know, you have a lot more autonomy. It's not, as quite bluntly speaking, bureaucratic. There's things that you can execute on in a much faster pace. But you touched on a few things, and I'd love to just get your take. So you've been there for the last couple of years. What was COVID like for you guys, and the pandemic, and how pivoting and shifting quickly between your team needed to be done, and how has that path to recuperation been like for you guys?
This might sound crazy.
I love that intro, by the way.
And I mean this in a professional sense purely, because I know it's had an impact on a number of people and folks' livelihoods. From a business perspective, strangely, one of the best things that ever happened to us.
Really? Wow.
It was. We did lose probably 35, maybe close to 40% of our business within the first probably 30 days of shutdown. So when states started shutting down, we started seeing our customers, because everybody was working in an office, and the majority of our business then was really all office professionals. So, you know, you think of your traditional corporate setting, right? We've got admins and accountants and HR folks working all over the country. And when they weren't going to work and our assignments were canceled, I would say within 30 days, you know, we were unsure of for a while, okay, what does this mean and what are we going to do? We were really in uncharted territory for the first time. And why I say it was the best thing that ever happened, going back to, I guess, my previous comments about, you know, flexibility and nimbleness and kind of making decisions on the ground, we came across a piece of business with a customer that we had that they were servicing essential businesses. And at that point in time, their business really started to boom, and not just in one market, but nationally across the country. And they asked us if we could support them in supporting their customers. And so, you know, we weren't sure if we were going to do the business at all first. Then we weren't sure we were going to do it long term. We decided, well, maybe we'll do it as a stopgap to get us through a rough patch. And then we'll go back to doing what we normally do. Well, that's not exactly what happened. As we engaged with this customer and they said, hey, we need you here. We need you there. These are the roles we need. We started filling jobs all over the country in these skill sets. And the next thing we knew, you know, we went from doing business in about, you know, 6 to 10 states to 48 states. Wow. By the end of the year. And awesome. Today, you know, that chunk of business, if you will, is turned into a whole separate operating unit of our company. We have additional customers in that customer base today. And so that's why I say it was really the best thing that ever happened. It really forced us to think differently about what we were doing. It really forced us to probably go down a path we wouldn't have gone down if business had remained consistent and constant during that time. So maybe a little bit of luck. So I won't discount that at all. But it really forced us to think about, okay, you know, who are we going to be and what are we going to be as we move forward? And there was an opportunity. It fit. It worked for us. We were good at it. And it turned out to be the right decision for us. So,
wow, that's an awesome story. And I think, you know, not very many different agencies, particularly in the space, could share how they've been able to just pivot so quickly and actually come up with an entirely new revenue generating stream for their business. So kudos to you guys and having that quick on your feet evolvement happen between the team. Okay, so to my next question, you know, you've been in the space for some time. You've seen a lot of things take place. I'm sure you've seen, you know, how this whole entire industry has evolved and, you know, maybe it was the start of the job boards, the evolvement of what the third party MSP VMS did to change a lot of the different notions. Are there any certain trends that you foresee coming or moving down the pipeline that, you know, kind of put a breath in your ear on what you should be paying attention to as somebody, as a professional within this industry?
Yeah, automation has been prevalent for a while.
Right.
You know, I think one of the things for us, and some of this technology has been out there for a while, but even for us through the pandemic, you know, automating our onboarding process and as much of the sourcing and the front end recruiting process as we could, it's probably one of the reasons we were even able to take on that additional piece of business. So I think automation and then, you know, artificial intelligence in the sense that, you know, there's more matching technology out there today than there used to be. And you know, now you can have, if you have the right system, you can have, you know, candidates matched to your jobs, whether you're a recruiting firm like us, or even if you are, you know, hiring on your own, if you're an employer. And those are all things I don't see changing as we continue to grow within the space. The one thing I think that will happen more, everything, in my opinion, when you look at not just our industry, but others, a lot of things are moving to more self-service functionality. And I'm not saying that the staffing and recruiting industry will go down that path entirely, but I think there's a lane for it where, you know, a customer may not want to pick up the phone and call a local branch or call a recruiter. They may want to just get online or get on their phone for that matter. And quickly log into an app or a portal and put that request in and maybe even match and have candidates linked to their openings on their own, but going through, in our case, a recruiting or staffing firm to do that. I see a place for that as we move forward. I don't think it'll fully replace, you know, what a recruiter will do for their customer or for a candidate, but I do think there's a lane for it where I need to get something filled quickly, or maybe I'm used to using the same candidates over and over for my temporary or contract gigs. And again, I know that there's some sort of freelance app stuff out there to do that today, mm-hmm. but specifically for our industry, I think we're on the front end of that. And that's something that we've been looking into as we move forward. I think having a bit more of a self-service function to what we do so that really even clients and candidates can interact with each other directly with little involvement from us at the branch level if they want to.
Yeah, 100%. That's going to be aligned with survivability for future agencies, is that capacity to be able to withstand that self-service online, that online presence. And I even think that there's some generational impacts to this as well, as we're looking at what the future workforce, and now millennials and Gen Zers are going to be the largest segment of the workforce here very soon, if not already inching towards yep. there. So how many times have you been in the room with your kids or your family and they're not calling, they're texting, they're messaging, they're getting that sort of acquaintance done with little type of human interaction as possible. So some good stuff there. Now let's talk about, I'd love to pick your brain on this, direct sourcing.
Yep.
If you open up any sort of publication within our space, staffing industry analysts, anything on ASA, and Shroom, I mean, what seems to be the top trend right now is the concept of direct sourcing, whereby these customers, clients are internally identifying the external workforce. So building up mm-hmm. recruitment teams. What do you think about that as an executive within the staffing space? And how would your team potentially look to evolve or potentially even capitalize on that movement?
Yeah. So if I'm understanding the question correctly, what really happens in a lot of those scenarios is sometimes your customer becomes your competitor at the same time, right? Because mm-hmm. they're competing for the same talent pool that you are. I think, and this is actually really not technology based, my response to it. I think what we're going to find is that as third-party recruiters, professional recruiters in this space, we're going to have to get better at searching and doing what I call true recruitment of talent. I think about one of the services that we were able to offer for many years, right, was we were better at writing job postings. We were better at maximizing or optimizing the job boards than maybe some of our customers were. And they would come to us for not just a candidate, but because we could do those other things better. Well, customers have gotten more sophisticated and they know how to do that pretty well themselves, you know, today. Many of them are hiring large recruiting staffs. They've got applicant tracking systems that can, you know, automatically match and do a number of other things for them. But the one thing I think that they can't do, and I'll go back to the term direct recruitment. I remember when I started in the business many years ago, we had to do tons and tons of direct recruitment to find candidates. And those are, it's not looking for the active job seeker, it's the passive one. But that requires, you know, looking up someone in a directory, for example. So I came out of accounting and finance. As an example, we would purchase CPA lists from state associations, and we would call through those lists over and over. That art form, to some degree, I think has been lost in our industry over the last several years because we've relied very heavily on technology and postings and job boards. So to sort of combat direct sourcing to some degree, the value in our service and what we do is really going to be, can we find those candidates that our customers can't find for themselves? And if we're fishing in a different talent pool than they are, then that's going to provide value. If we're always in the same pool they are, then after a while, they're not going to need us. And I think that's really going to be the difference. And we've got to go back. We started doing this in our organization lately. We've got to train our recruiters to be, you know, better recruiters and really search for those candidates that maybe aren't out there looking for jobs, don't have their resume posted, aren't applying or responding to things. I think that's what we have to do better.
Oh, that's fantastic. I absolutely love that answer. It's really bringing the human element back into recruiting. I think you can talk all day about what AI and automation can do. And in some cases you hear, you know, I guess, you know, the fear mongering happening on how that can extinct an entire industry like recruiting. But at the end of the day, there is going to be that added layer of recruiters needing to take the human element and really curate a talent pool that isn't discoverable.
So, yep.
Thanks for that answer. Now, this all of it lies in, I love how you blended a little bit of the old school with the new school, the AI, and then going back to your old recruiting days, finding that passive candidate. But in 5 to 10 years, you hear a lot about the future of work. What does the future of work look like for you, John?
That is a great question. I'm not sure I have this all figured out, but everything I've read, experienced, you know, you hear constantly about skill shortages. You know, I think to meet some of the demand, you know, what we see a lot because one of our segment is in that supply chain space, we see a huge gap in skilled trades. You know, that they're just, I look back, you know, maybe not so much in my generation, but certainly I'm a father of millennials. So, you know, I know within that generation, those weren't positions, professions that were really promoted with that group of kids. It was always go to college, get the 4-year degree, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think looking at skilled trades as a real viable option, because there is a huge shortage there. Interestingly, one of my stepdaughter went down that path after high school, went to welding school at a state, was one of only two females in her welding school program at the time, graduated, instantly was hired. And so she's been working for, gosh, almost the last couple of years now as a MIG and TIG certified welder. Now, if you'd asked me, you know, 10 years ago, if I would have thought she would be a welder, my answer would have probably been no. But I think it's, you know, opportunities that are maybe outside the norm, maybe things that not just kids graduating from high school or college, but really anybody that may be looking at making a career change or a shift if their industry is not growing. I think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity in skilled trades. I think IT will continue to be there. That's not going away. But the other piece is data analytics. I know that has grown tremendously over the last, you know, certainly 5 years for sure. Today, I don't do anything without looking in my Power BI portal to see, hey, where are the trends today, up, down, and there's got to be somebody behind the scenes, not only building that for us, but you know, also helping us with analyzing the data and crunching the numbers. So I see those three areas as, you know, key areas that I think aren't going to change over the next, certainly the next 10 years for sure.
Awesome. I think you're right. I love the story that you shared with your daughter-in-law. I think I share the same sentiment. Most of my mother's children are college graduated, but if you look at the one that hit six figures the quickest and is still doing very well for himself is the one that went into skilled trade for oil and gas. So there's a lot to be said for that. And I think there's definitely a generational impact as to why it is in the state that it is now. But you know, hopefully that's aligned to where the future of work is headed as well. So a recent study, and we actually published this with our staff, said that 40% of executives, one of their top concerns is the demand for talent and finding the right talent for their organizations. Although the executives that were interviewed within the survey were those within the corporate structure, would you say that aligns with probably one of your top concerns as an executive within staffing?
Yes is the short answer. I think what I have found, we can put great strategies together. We can create, you know, the verticals and the go-to-market strategies and the tactics around doing that, have a great plan. But if we don't have good people, great people to execute on that plan, our plan doesn't mean much. We have found, at least with Stiver since I've been here, we tend to build versus buy. And what I mean by that is we have a profile where we typically look for internal candidates who are from either outside the industry or maybe they're a new college grad and it's their first what I would call professional opportunity. We have had more success with that versus getting candidates that maybe have a lot of industry experience. And for whatever reason, that just hasn't translated well into what we're trying to do here at Stivers. But, in order to attract that talent, I think what we've tried to do, and I don't know if any of us have cracked the code on this either, it really is about the culture that we've tried to build, number one. I think number two, you know, what sort of learning and development opportunities do we provide them to grow? And what I am finding with that, it's not always about climbing the perceived corporate ladder. I'm finding that a lot of our folks are looking for horizontal growth as well. You know, are there other projects that they can get involved with, even if that means they stay in their current role, but they're able to touch or influence or impact other things that we may be doing? You mentioned ASA earlier. We've offered, you know, ASA certifications through our organization. So if you've been with us a certain length of time for personal development, we'll pick up the cost on those and, get you certified. And that's something that you can take with you, even if you don't stay with us or you stay within the industry and go elsewhere, that's yours. You keep it. It doesn't belong to us. So we're trying to do those sorts of things to not only retain, retain our talent as well, because I also know that we're going to have to keep a core nucleus of our folks together for a long stretch of time to get where we have to go. I expect there's always going to be some changing parts. We as an industry have a little bit of a high turnover rate as it is anyway, but if you can keep a core nucleus of good talent together, for a stretch of time, generally that's when you start pulling something together that becomes very meaningful and impactful in people's lives. So that's what we're trying to do.
It's pretty awesome. I think you hit on something that, again, going back to the generational impact, millennials are more concerned with, as opposed to climbing the corporate ladder, the fulfillment that they get at work in upskilling, having the ability to put their hands into many different areas and thereby increase their repertoire in whatever it is that they specialize in is super high on the list. So you guys are directly tapping into that. And that leads me to my next question, because you did mention some things about retention. Top of mind, if you think about it, you and I are probably on LinkedIn every day, as most people within this industry are. We are now in the Great Resignation. So this year was originally coined as the Great Rehire because of the comeback story that everyone was anticipating. Lo and behold, we have 9 million job openings, 4 million people resignating in the month of April alone, which comes out to 2.7% of the working population in 1 month left their job. Tell us a little bit about why you think this is, and you gave us some things on what you can do to retain that talent, but any insight that an opinion that you can give us on the war of retention as it's happening right now?
Yeah, I mean, simply put, if you want a job or want to make a job change, you're in the driver's seat. You have options is the best way to put it. So we've had to maybe educate and re-educate a number of our employers, our customers that we work with to say, look, it's a candidate driven market at the moment. Things run in cycles. I don't know how long exactly this cycle is going to run, but I think what's different about this one than maybe previous rebounds from recessionary periods and this gap between job openings, our labor participation rate is probably the biggest number that concerns me. If you go back and look at what that number was in around 2001, I think it was somewhere in the mid 60s, 66, 67%. Even through good economic times, that number has been steadily dropping. And we, of course, bottomed out, through April, May last year in the middle of the heavy shutdowns of COVID. And as we've bounced back, we've only hit about 61.5%, maybe 62%. And that may not seem like a big swing, only what, 4 or 5 percentage points, but that's a lot of people. And I'm not sure if it's going to come back quite as quickly. And I think you have a lot of demographic factors that are impacting that. You've got a baby boomer population that, has been in the workforce for a really long time, and maybe COVID sort of sped up some of those retirements. So they've decided exiting and not coming back to work. But that transfer of knowledge hasn't occurred, and there aren't enough people yet in the workforce to replace all of the baby boomers. So I think that's an issue we have. Another thing I read recently, and I didn't really give this much thought until then, but with remote work being more prevalent, a lot of people have moved. So they may have moved out of larger urban areas and moved to other parts of the country. Well, as job openings are coming back, those jobs are opening places where people have left. And so there aren't people available in those geographies any longer like there were before to fill those jobs because they've moved out to a smaller metropolitan area or even a rural area. And so they're looking for work elsewhere, or they're looking for remote work if they're looking, or they have a job and they're working remotely, so it doesn't matter where they live. So I think all these things are really impacting our ability to fill jobs. I think it's more than just, we talk a lot about skills training and gaps. I think it's more than that. I think there's a huge demographic factor to it that we have to figure out as well, because I think we're going to have a shortage of people for a really long time. But I do think we're going to see a lot of movement probably through the latter half of this year and early next year, where it's an opportunity and a challenge all at the same time. Where people want to move, you're going to be able to attract talent if it's the right job for them, you're the right organization with the right culture. The challenge is you're also going to have people recruiting your best people as well to pull them out of your company and come work for them. And I think it's sort of bittersweet, if that makes any sense. It's going to be a challenge. And I think you got to do what you can to hang on to your core people first and continue to build around them. Make sure you don't lose those folks. Because I think that's when companies really start feeling the pressure. How are we going to get to the next level that we need to get to if we don't have that core group of people? And I think money is only going to satisfy it for so long. Salaries are starting to move, but I think that's a short-term play. I don't think that's gonna last forever because there comes a tipping point where companies can't afford to offer anymore. And money's not always the determining factor as to why someone makes a move. Generally, they're unhappy. They're looking for growth they don't have, something along those lines. So
yeah,
I think the next 6 to 8 months will be interesting.
Yeah, especially the year after COVID, where everyone questioned everything. I mean,
yeah,
you and I included in that. And You said some interesting things about remote work and abandoned downtowns like San Francisco. Probably not the best time to be in commercial real estate in San Francisco right now. It is what it is, but some great tips within there, which kind of makes me a little bit sad because that means we're wrapping up today's podcast. I've absorbed everything that you've said on today's call like a sponge, and I know many of our listeners will take the same takeaways as well. But just so that I know, what's inside the mind of John? What's your content diet? Are there any books that you're reading, or what do you do to stay up to date on many of the different things you see going on?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a news junkie, which is good and bad some days. But you know, I have a regular routine of getting up, you know, getting the workout out of the way, and then reading the local news, going to the Wall Street Journal. I get a daily feed from the Chicago Business Journal specifically, but it also provides updates for other markets and companies across the country. So that's probably one of the first things I do. From an industry perspective, ASA, the American Staffing Association, and SIA are probably my two biggest sources for, you know, anything going on within the industry. I do have an executive coach as well that provides a lot of reading material, most of it in snippets and case studies and things like that. And I do have one book that I'm reading right now. It's called Range. And the gist of it is, you know, how generalists really succeed and perform better in specialist worlds. It's rather interesting, but it has a lot of sports analogies in it. But, you know, even some of the best athletes that we've thought of and think of today, where they may you know, be a one sport athlete now, it talks about how in many cases that was not the case throughout the course of their lifetime. Like, they may have even been better at one sport early on, but they had their hands in a lot of different things. And so it's interesting to sort of see, you know, that migration from, okay, you're a specialist today, but to get to that point, you went through, you know, a lot of different iterations of what that looks like. And so a unique perspective, I think, on it.
I was just thinking of the MJ documentary where he's, you know, you see him as a really great golfer. Of course, he's great on the court. He went into baseball. It's that generalist transcending into different areas easily. Yep. Awesome. Range. We'll have to check it out. So John, that wraps up today's podcast. Before we say our closing remarks, is there any way that the listeners can get a hold of you if they want to find you? What's the best way to do that?
Sure. You can visit our website at stivers.com and always send a message there or, you know, through LinkedIn and email, you know, jlewin@stivers.com, always accessible.
Awesome. John, thank you so much for your time. Thank you to our listeners for spending a few moments. We will catch you guys in the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.